Truth Seekers, Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thank you very much for tuning in this evening. Hope you stick around for a while. And I'm sure you know, because it's certainly got an awful lot of media attention today, as well it should. The human race has lost one of its greatest lights today with the death of Luciano Pavarotti, who once said about his craft that learning music by reading about it is like making love by mail. You gotta love that, huh? In a lot of people's opinions, possibly mine, he was the most famous opera singer of his age, and perhaps of all time, even considering people like Enrico Caruso. You can't truly listen to his music and not be moved. And he was relatively young. He will be missed. In stark contrast to all that, President Chucklenuts, who probably wouldn't know Pavarotti from a dachshund, Chucklenuts was touring the Land of Oz today and spoke with China's Hu Jintao about issues ranging from climate change, trade deficits, Iranian nukes, and unsafe Chinese imports. Bush later told reporters that the U.S. relationship with China is, in Bush's words, complex, which means he had no idea whatsoever what he and Hu Jintao were talking about, why they were talking about it, or where they were at the time of the chat. Where's Condi Rice when you need her? We want to... We're going to end each hour tonight with the signature piece that Pavarotti, it became his signature piece, Nessun Dormo from the Puccini opera. And we're going to play it all three times, all 3 minutes of the cascade, 3 minutes, 3 minutes, 1 second, I believe, at the end of each hour, on the obvious assumption that not everyone listens to all 3 hours of this program. Matter of fact, very few people do, I would imagine. So, and we just think it would be nice to play it for the various audiences that we have coming in and leaving. But we're going to start tonight with one of his pieces, O Solo Mio, that most of us are extremely familiar with, if you're over a certain age. So many of these songs used to be played on regular AM radio, which I now find very strange. Pavarotti, O Solo Mio.
Cosa una giornata e sole, un'aria serena dopo una tempesta, per aria fresca fare già una festa. Che bella cosa una giornata e sole. Pronto a te, lo so. mia fronte a te. Me viene quasi una malinconia sotto fenestra toia restaria quando fa notte o sole se ne scende.
I can just imagine somebody tuning into this program tonight. Well, let's go see what Malloy's talking about, Chuckle Nuts, and hearing that. Well, that's part of the charm of this program. You never know, do you? Now, we're not going to overwhelm you with Pavarotti tonight. As a matter of fact, with maybe one or two exceptions, depending on Kathy's mood, we'll just play our regular musical offerings tonight. But at the end of each hour, the full 3 minutes and 1 second of the Nessun Dormo, which is very moving, very moving. If you've gone to YouTube and if you've seen Paul Potts, the the Welshman who sang Nessun Dormo in the UK version of what is it? What's the program? The talent program. Yeah, the UK version of American Idol. God, just. Oh, I hate that. I hate forgetting it, but I hate talking about it too. But if you saw Paul Potts' performance, it's on YouTube. It's very, very moving. Very moving. I defy you. Go to YouTube.com. Just type in Paul Potts, P-O-T-T-S. And if you want to, Nessun Dormo, two words, N-E-S-S-U-M-D-O-R-M-O. And that video runs about just a little over 4 minutes. And if you can sit there and watch that without getting tears in your eyes or sobbing, check your pulse. I made the mistake of doing that several times today, and my inner Italian just about went berserk. I'm sitting down here in the studio watching Paul Potts' version of Nessun Dormo, and Molly came down. Why are you crying? Because I stubbed my heart. But the day kind of started with the Music Factory. Our Catskill Mountains bureau chief sent this. He wrote, I remember not too long ago you mentioned how you wish you could talk about things other than the madness and ugliness we're forced to swallow every day. Well, this may be a bit funky, but here goes. This morning I heard on NPR that Luciano Pavarotti died. Rather than go into a lengthy biography for you and your listeners, I'll just say that he's worth checking out on the web and subsequently on CD. Really? Suffice it to say that the impact of the man's phenomenal talent extends through and beyond opera. And while one may not be a fan of the genre, he still needs to be recognized. We won't see anything like him for a long time, sort of like Comet Kohoutek. And we won't hear any tributes from Oedipus Tex because he thinks that Pavarotti is something you put on pizza. Besides, acknowledging the maestro wouldn't win him any approval ratings with the line dancers in Branson, Missouri. I heard the news today, the Music Factory writes, and wept. And if you think that I'm crazy, wait till you see Italy's reaction. If the Italian president were killed, not an espresso machine would burp, but an opera singer? And Pavarotti yet? The sun won't dare show its face this day, and Italians will cry until La Scala itself is bathed in tears. An odd tie-in to American politics. Upon taking in the news, I thought to myself, the world is a little less beautiful today. Then on the heels of that thought, I heard about Fred Thompson officially announcing his presidential candidacy and further thought, yep, the world is a little less beautiful today. Could you play a snippet of Pavarotti for one of your bumpers tonight in tribute to A Light Is Extinguished? Tell Kathy I humbly suggest one of his signature passages, the end of Nessun Dorma. It's a killer. The Music Factory. So, yeah, we'll do that for you, AJ, and everybody else. At the end of each hour going out, we will play that for you. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Dalla sua mano sentia, e questa mano stringermi, dalla sua mano sentia, oh, ah, mi tradia, ah, mi tradia.
So long, honey, baby, where I'm bound, I can't tell. Goodbye is too good a word, baby, so I just say fairly well.
Hey, truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, more of Mike Malloy.
And if you didn't know, Nessun Dorma was, from the opera. Turandot was taken from a Persian collection of stories called the Book of 1001 Days, not to be confused with the Book of 1001 Nights. And Persia, of course, we know where Persia is, don't we? It's about to be annihilated by George Bush because it is now called Iran. Speaking of the moron, in Australia, Lauren writes, as confused as he was, Bush was nice enough to wish Jews a happy Rosh Hashanah. Unfortunately, it isn't for another week. Maybe Australia is a week ahead of our time zone, not just 16 hours. Jesus, God. Oh. Maybe next week he'll wish the Christians a Merry Christmas, right? And this also from Australia. Members of an Australian TV comedy show drove through two security checkpoints yesterday before being stopped near the hotel in Sydney where Chucklenuts is staying. One of them was dressed like Osama bin Laden, or at least the way he appears in the videos. According to the AP, police surrounded a man dressed as bin Laden. Members of a comedy show used a fake motorcade to get near the hotel where Bush is staying on an official visit. The stunt embarrassed Sydney police, who have imposed the tightest security measures in that city's history. For a summit of leaders from Pacific Rim countries, including Bush. So how did the cops respond? Kind of like they would hear. They arrested 11 cast and crew members from the TV program The Chasers War on Everything. They impounded three vehicles. That's according to the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, which airs the show. What happened, the cast members of the show put together a fake motorcade, and they hired two motorcycles and three large cars, and on the cars they put Canadian flags. Police waved the motorcade through two checkpoints before the cops finally pulled it over near the hotel where Bush is nesting. The cast member of The Chasers War on Everything, one of the cast members, this guy named Chaz, is that it? Chaz Vicciardello got out of the car dressed in a white tunic and cap and wearing a long, fake Osama bin Laden-style beard. Cast member Chris Taylor was quoted as saying, "No particular reason we chose Canada. We just thought they'd be a country who the cops wouldn't scrutinize too closely and who feasibly would only have three cars in the motorcade as opposed to the 20 or so gas guzzlers that Bush brought with him." Now, apparently on this program, the chasers were on everything. Bush is a frequent target on that program, as are Australian politicians. The Aussie Foreign Minister, Alexander Downer, I've always loved his name, Alexander Downer said the stunt proved that security was working. Oh, Jesus. Way to go. That's in Australia, and I guess you heard up here, CBS, what CBS did to anti-war protesters in Kansas City on August 10th. You know, a month ago, the CBS Early Show went to Kansas City, Missouri, and they used Liberty Memorial Park. The Early Show was featuring the country western band Big and Rich. And when the local peace community heard that the Early Show was coming to the park, activists hoped to get their message to a national audience. So Ira Harrett, Kansas City Area Program Coordinator for American Friends Service Committee, AFSC, said, "I received an email about the event and the flyer from the Early Show inviting people to attend. I RSVP'd saying some people from the American Friends Service Committee would be there. So Mr. Harrett recruited people to come and carry some of the AFSC Cost of War banners. These are 7 feet long and about 3 feet high, and they all give different answers to the question, 1 day of the Iraq War equals, and the answer on some of them, well, here's one, such as $720 million, or 84 elementary schools. Harrett says, "We started assembling the banners in the park, and immediately a CBS staff person said, 'You can't be here. You can't have those here.'" There's more to this story, and I'll share it with you coming back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Fascinating country that is significant in its size. Its economy is still small but growing.
It's about 25 before the hour. Yeah, Chucklenuts is in the Land of Oz. She's got a big summit down there. I'm going to a summit. I'm going to meet that Chinaman. And where it concerns Iraq right now, I'm playing for October, November. Gets in a position where the presidential candidates will be comfortable about sustaining a presence and stay longer. But I'm in Australia today. Me and Condi. Laura had a pinched nerve in her neck. Condi is going to be my date. Anyway, back to Kansas City, Missouri, the Early Show, CBS, the Katie Couric Network, decides to do their show live, their morning show from Liberty Memorial Park, which I understand has kind of a reputation. Ira Harrett, Kansas City Area Program Coordinator for the American Friends Service Committee, that's the Quakers, of course, peace organization, got an invitation, RSVP'd, and decided to show up. And they started unrolling some banners in the park. Immediately, CBS staff person said, "You can't be here. You can't have those here." So Harrett and the other activists challenged the staff person, saying, "This is a public park. We have a right to be here." They reached a compromise with CBS. The CBS employee, along with security, allowed them to stay in the park as long as they did not get into camera view. And the CBS employee said, "I promise you the TV cameras will not span this area." Well, that's not exactly what the American Friends Service Committee protesters had hoped for, right? Harris said, I was very disappointed. CBS was censoring what messages Kansas Cityans were bringing to the early show. Mr. Harris says, other signs were allowed to be seen on camera. He says, one was supporting the Navy. One said, save a horse, ride a cowboy. There were signs for... No, I'm not going to comment on that. There were signs for things for sale and commercial signs. And Mr. Harrett finds that inconsistent and troubling. He said, given that the Iraq war is the most important issue on people's minds, that they wouldn't allow this opinion to be on the public airwaves means that they want to make sure that the messages don't conflict with the large multinationals that are profiting from this war. Yeah, including CBS. CBS wouldn't even allow Mr. Harrett to circulate an anti-war petition where he wanted to in the park. The petition was to defend the war and refund human needs. And this goes on and on. One of the protesters, Corva Murphy, got handcuffed. She's a 60-year-old activist, is a member of Peace Works, an anti-nuclear weapons group. She and her husband, Everett, often join the American Friends Service Committee members at peace rallies. And so they came to Liberty Memorial Park at 5 a.m. on August 10th, the day of the CBS Early Show. She says, we had our anti-war signs. My husband's is bright yellow with red letters. It says, out of Iraq now. Mine says, if you like this war, you're going to love the draft. And the words war and draft are in red letters. Oh, by the way, Corva and Everett Murphy's son served in Iraq in 2005 as a Navy corpsman. She says, he was in Mosul. He's okay, but if this war keeps going, he'll have to go back. Corva Murphy says that's not the sole reason they're protesting. She said, we do it for all our sons and daughters and all the innocent Iraqi people. That's why we're out here every chance we get. So at the park with CBS there, Corva and Everett Murphy decided to stand near where Harry Smith, the MC, the anchor, was going to be broadcasting. She says other people were holding signs, including ones that said, I love Big and Rich, and Hey Dad, we made it. But it was only their sign that was verboten. After a few minutes, she says, somebody from security came and said, you can't be here. Then someone from CBS said, you have to put your signs down. CBS didn't want any political signs. Corva and Everett Murphy, whose son served in the Iraq War, insisted that this was a public park, but they were told it wasn't. Corva said, my husband said, yes, it is. Our tax dollars pay for this. But then a police officer responded. The cop said, you really have to go. I'll escort you. Your friends are down below, referring to the AFSC demonstrators. Corva says, he escorted us to where the cost of war banners were. Then my husband and I moved about 10 feet back to where the steps started up to the main event. We stood there for about 5 minutes, and then the security came again. They told us we'd have to move back and stand in the line with our friends, way out of camera range. We couldn't stand where we were. Corva Murphy, 60 years old, peace activist, whose son served in Iraq in 2005, decided she'd had enough. I said, look, I'm standing here. I'm not moving. This is my right as a citizen. They said, well, then we'll have to call the police. Corva said, you just call the police. Said, I'm not moving. So then two cops arrived. One said, if you don't leave now, ma'am, I'll have to arrest you. And Corva said, you'll have to arrest me then because I'm not moving back. He said, okay, I'm going to put the cuffs on you. And Corva said, okay. She was not prepared for the cuffing, however. She says, was that ever a shock? They pull your arms behind you real hard and put those cuffs on you immediately. Your arms are kind of jerked behind. Though Murphy, Corva Murphy, 60-year-old peace activist whose son has served in Iraq, although she was handcuffed, she was not arrested. She says she even asked the police officer to go ahead and arrest her. She says she told him, this will do our cause a lot of good if you do. But she says he responded, I'm not going to arrest you because I'm off duty. And that would mean a lot of work for me. Off duty? After a while, the police officer took the cuffs off of her. But she says he was always keeping his eyes on me. CBS said in a statement, quote, we had a huge, enthusiastic crowd that was very well behaved and appeared to be having a good time. We are unaware of any incidents. The local American Friends Service Committee program director and a founding member of the Kansas City Iraq Task Force says there's no doubt that CBS was clearing the field of anti-war signs. They knew what was going on. The committee spokesman said there was a woman with a CBS badge on who kept going back to the CBS trailer, and she told us, if those things get on the air, I'm going to lose my job. So there you have it. It's amazing. Cognitive dissonance? Let's all stand there. Well, a nice, cheerful musical ensemble plays some music for us in the morning, and Harry Smith can say whatever he wants to say and talk about his colleague, Katie Couric, who's over there in Iraq, really checking things out, man. But if anyone should attempt to unfurl a banner back in the background of CBS's wide shot, they will be removed. And here's one more from Sydney, Australia. It seemed like a good idea at the time, a round of golf. U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice and the Australian Foreign Minister, they're going to have some golf. He had challenged her to a game at Sydney's Rose Bay Golf Club. While those two countries' leaders, the U.S. and Australia, work out the deep and meaningful answers to issues such as world trade and climate change, right? But with Australia's largest city, Sydney, under the biggest security clampdown in the country's history, no golf. No golf. The foreign minister said, it just involves too much redeployment of security, so we just decided it wasn't worth it. I mean, it's just a game of golf. He went on to say, it's a pity, but the risk of protesters rushing out and assaulting her on the golf course is something that the police worry about, so we'll spare them the concern. And then he said, it doesn't seem a good use of our security resources to be protecting us playing a game of golf, so I thought it was better to give it away. Apparently what he leaves out is that parts of Sydney have effectively become a ghost town, with a huge steel and concrete fence sealing off an exclusion zone where leaders of these 26 or 21 Pacific Rim economies will meet over the next few days. Armed police patrolling the streets and the harbor waters, helicopters buzzing constantly overhead, snipers set up in key positions, and Sydney residents, they're freaked out. Every place this rat bastard goes, that security is not for Hu Jintao, or the Japanese delegation, or the Indonesian delegation, or the Philippine delegation, or the Australian delegation, or the New Zealand delegation, or whatever these other delegations are. That security, that lockdown, that turning, even momentarily, the city of Sydney into a city under siege, is for the most hated, useless, murderous American leader in this country's history. George W. Bush. Good God. And Sidney Blumenthal, we'll have this next hour, but Sidney Blumenthal writing at Salon.com. This is an incredible article that Bush knew from the very beginning, and there's ample proof now, that Saddam had no weapons of mass destruction. He knew it. He knew it in October of 2002. It's incredible. If you haven't read this, Sidney Blumenthal, Salon.com. I'm not going to read the whole thing on the air. It's too long, but it's astonishing. We'll quote a little bit from it next hour. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
talk radio right from the left. It's More of Mike Malloy.
Nothing comes from violence, nothing ever could. For all I was born beneath an angry star. Lest we forget how fresh.
According to the New York Daily News today, lawmakers going back to D.C. this week got hit with more bad news about Iraq. There's another confidential report out. They're just falling like snowflakes, aren't they, that says the Iraq is collapsing. Collapsing. According to the report, the boycott of that sad, fake toy, play toy of Bush's, that government, the boycott of that government, but by certain Shiite and Kurdish political blocs, has left Iraq's leadership hanging by a thread. Now, this is a report that was put together by the Congressional Research Service. It is Congress's research and analysis arm, and it was completed about 2 weeks ago for the House and the Senate. The author of the report says, quote, "My assessment is that because of the number and breadth of parties boycotting the cabinet, the Iraqi government is in essential collapse. That argues against any real prospects for political reconciliation," end quote. The report adds that without a political infrastructure, any military progress would be short-lived. Well, duh. The report was put together by Kenneth Katzman. Katzman, who grew up on Long Island, also challenged the so-called success of the so-called Baghdad Security Plan, known as the Troop Surge, which Bush claims is working. Katzman said, "I would even question the military progress." Many senior State Department officials in Iraq have a political solution to the war, or say that a political solution to the war is now hopeless. And Katzman said, "I would agree with that." The Congressional Research Service analysis said that Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki is trying to save, quote, "a collapsing government while fending off rivals who wish to topple him," including the United States. Incredible. Incredible. The report goes on to say that while U.S. troops have succeeded in temporarily pacifying Anbar province west of Baghdad, isn't that where Chucklenuts was the other day? Yeah. Violence has sparked north of the city in provinces such as Diyala, where al-Qaeda in Iraq has relocated, according to the report. The report was obtained by the New York Daily News, and it was completed before another pessimistic congressional report released yesterday. Both were waiting for lawmakers when they got back. Jesus. But Bush, no. Everything is just perfect. Everything is going swimmingly. There's no problem. Bush said right now, "I'm playing for October, November. Get us in a position in Iraq where the presidential candidates would be comfortable about sustaining a presence and stay longer." You know, I cry. I do. I cry. I got God's shoulder to cry on. I cry a lot. But right now, I'm playing, sucker, for October, November. Try to get us into position in Iraq where the presidential candidates would be comfortable about sustaining a presence and stay there longer. Huh? What do you think of that? Am I slick? Am I cool? We're going to close out this hour and the next hour and the third hour tonight with Nessun Dorma from the Puccini opera. And this, as I found out today, this became one of Pavarotti's signature songs. I didn't realize. I mean, of course, like you, I've heard mucho Pavarotti, molto Pavarotti, but I didn't know it was his signature song. So we're going to play this version of it from a live concert of Pavarotti's. I'm not sure when this was recorded, but... It runs just under 3 minutes, so sit back and enjoy.
Principessa, ne
nella tua fredda stanza, guardi le stelle che tremano d'amore e di speranza. Ma il mio mistero è chiuso in me, il nome mio nessun saprà, no, no, sulla tua bocca lo dirò, quando la luce splenderà. Ed il mio bacio scioglierò il silenzio che ti fa mia. Dire buonanotte tra all'alba vincerò, vincerò, vincerò.
Brings out your inner Italian, doesn't it? Huh? Huh? Bravo! Bravo! Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy program on Nova M Radio. I feel like an idiot saying this, so let me just say it and go ahead and feel like an idiot, and then we can move on. I don't know why Sidney Blumenthal's piece in Salon.com is not on the front page of every newspaper in the United States. That is not specifically, or does not specifically identify itself as right-wing. It's just unbelievable. Unbelievable. On 18 September 2002, CIA Director George Tenet briefed Bush in the Oval Office on top secret intelligence that Saddam Hussein did not have weapons of mass destruction. This is according to two former senior CIA officers. But Bush dismissed as worthless this information from the Iraqi foreign minister, a member of Saddam's inner circle, although it turned out to be accurate in every detail. Tenet never brought it up again. Nor was that intelligence included in the National Intelligence Estimate of October 2002, which stated categorically that Iraq did possess weapons of mass destruction. Now, here's the kicker. This, you know, I could just wring the necks of every single right-wing thug on talk radio or talk television who uses the tired excuse, well, the Democrats voted for the war. They knew what was going on. They had the information. The truth is, no one in Congress was aware of the secret intelligence that Saddam had zero WMDs, as the House of Representatives and the Senate voted a week after the submission of this national intelligence estimate. They voted on the authorization for use of military force in Iraq. That was the full name of the authorization. Nobody knew except Bush, George Tenet, some of Bush's inner circle, the intelligence people who put it together, to say to him, dear leader, there is nothing there. Blumenthal writes, on 23 April 2006, last April, April a year ago, CBS's 60 Minutes interviewed Tyler Drumheller, the former CIA chief of clandestine operations for Europe, who disclosed that the agency had received documentary intelligence from Naji Sabri, Saddam's foreign minister, that Saddam did not have WMDs. Drumheller said on that program, quote, we continued to validate what he said the whole way through. The policy was set. The war in Iraq was coming, and they were looking for intelligence to fit into the policy, to justify the policy, end quote. And now two former senior CIA officers have confirmed Tyler Drumheller's account to Blumenthal and provided the background to the story of how the information that might have stopped the invasion of Iraq was twisted in order to justify the invasion. These two former CIA officers described what Tenet said to Bush about the lack of WMDs and how Bush responded, and noted that Tenet never shared Sabri's intelligence with then-Secretary of State Colin Powell. So, does this let Colin Powell off the hook? As far as I'm concerned, hell no. He was the Secretary of State. And if he didn't know what was going on, literally, behind his back, then he shouldn't have been Secretary of State. But Colin Powell was a get-along, go-along. Don't forget, Colin Powell's like Petraeus, another one of these apple polishers. Colin Powell is a phony and a fake. He is the man who, when I believe he was a colonel or a major in Vietnam, did everything in his power to cover up the My Lai incident, the murder of hundreds of women and children and old people in a ditch. Colin Powell is a thug. Anyway, back to what Blumenthal said. According to the former CIA officers, the intelligence also was never shared with the senior military planning the invasion. And they went ahead and required U.S. soldiers to receive medical shots against the ill effects of weapons of mass destruction that didn't exist, and to wear protective uniforms in the desert heat against weapons that didn't exist. These sons of bitches play-acted this thing from start to finish. And here we sit. And the Democratic Party leadership in the House and the Senate say that impeachment is off the table. What in the hell does it take? The former CIA officials told Blumenthal that the information was distorted in a report written to fit the preconception that Saddam did have weapons of mass destruction programs. According to Blumenthal, that false and restructured report was then passed to Richard Dearlove, chief of the British Secret Intelligence Service, that's MI6, who briefed Tony Blair as the validation of the cause for war. Now, you remember that this came out in the Downing Street memos, right? Where it was being described by British intelligence that the lies were being fixed around Bush's madness in order to justify this invasion and occupation. Jesus, do you understand what's being said here, Truth Seeker? Blumenthal goes on, Secretary of State Powell, in preparation for his presentation of evidence of Saddam's WMDs to the United Nations Security Council on 5 February 2003. Remember that? Powell spent days at CIA headquarters in Langley, Virginia, and had Tenet sit directly behind him when he talked at the UN as a sign of credibility. But Tenet, according to the sources, never told Colin Powell about the intelligence that there was no there, just as the UN weapons inspectors, Mohammed al-Baradei, Scott Ritter, they were all saying it. There's nothing here. And the hideous part was, they had Class A intelligence agreeing. There are no weapons. There are no weapons programs. There are no trailers. There's no chemical this. There's no biological that. There's no nuclear anything. There's nothing here. And then Powell got out there and made his speech to the UN, and it's become clear and apparent to some of us, apparently not to the Democratic Party leadership who should remove this son of a bitch from office, but it became clear to Powell that he had stood there and lied to the entire world. Everything Colin Powell said that day, every rinky-dink little chart and graphic with trailers and arrows and palm trees was a lie. And the inner circle knew it. They knew it. And then Blumenthal says that both the French Intelligence Service and the CIA paid this Sabri, who was the foreign minister, the Iraq foreign minister under Saddam. They paid Sabri hundreds of thousands of dollars to give them documents on everything that had to do with Saddam's weapons of mass destruction programs. One of the former CIA officers told Blumenthal, quote, the information detailed that Saddam may have wished to have a program. His engineers had told him they could build a nuclear weapon within 2 years if they had fissile material, which they didn't. And the documents clearly prove that they had no chemical, no biological weapons. Nothing. 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 And they all knew it. They all knew it. The fact is, there was nothing there. No threat, nothing. Bush determined what he wanted to hear and closed his ears to the rest of it and lied this country into a war. What more does it take? What in God's name does it take to get this bastard out of office? The one of the CIA officers disclosed, and this wasn't in Blumenthal's article, but it came out in a discussion. Quote, the president had no interest in intelligence. Bush didn't give a F about the intelligence. He had his mind made up. He had his mind made up. Do you understand that?
Kicked out the inspectors and we crossed the no-fly zone. When we first arrived in Baghdad, Mr. Bush declared we'd won.
So we had after Secretary of State Powell's presentation to the United Nations Security Council, the world knows that Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction.
Nobody found it. That's because it came from Dallas. He went in without a clue. Now he's left Iraq a zoo. The weapon of mass destruction is our own George W.
Iraqi regime is a threat of unique urgency. It has developed weapons of mass death.
Math death. That's what I used to suffer in high school, my junior year in advanced algebra. Every afternoon at 2:30, math death. All right, some phone calls here before we lose you. Let's start with Gary, who's calling from Long Island, New York, listening via the internet. Gary, welcome to the program.
Hey,
Mike.
Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing all right, Gary.
Good, good. You caught me off guard. I was just listening on the speakerphone. Listen, I was searching the web, looking at Crooks and Liars, and they kind of linked to a blog called TPM Cafe.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy on there is...
Yeah, I quoted him last night.
What's that?
I read that last night on the air.
Yeah.
What's his name? Johnson? No, what's his name?
Larry Johnson?
Yeah, Larry Johnson. Yeah, okay. I read his whole little mini blog there.
Yeah, you know, I'm sorry. I wasn't listening last night.
That's all right. It's okay.
Six-year-old, so sometimes they...
Yeah, I know.
But I tell you, this really scared the hell out of me because, you know, they're talking about that Barksdale, Louisiana base.
Right.
Okay, as a jump-off point.
Right.
For any attacks, you know, in the Middle East.
Yes.
And I was just wondering, you know, these idiots have been caught with their pants down so many times that, you know, it could have just been a, you know, a flippant response to say, oh, we'll just tell them that, you know, we made a mistake because, you know, they probably had a whistleblower on there going, oh, my God, you know. You know, picture somebody, you know, in the lower ranks working there, and they're seeing the build-up and everything. It's like, wow, these guys could really go through with it. And then you see a B-52 come in with six nukes. I mean, that probably made somebody go, you know, somebody's got to know about this.
Well, that's what the skinny is today, making its way around the Internet, that, in fact, it wasn't some, you know, airman third class or some low rank or some non-com that the story was leaked. Now, nobody's naming names. Nobody is, you know, this is all hush-hush, but the story was put out there by somebody high up in the military chain of command for the United States Air Force who saw that and thought, Jesus Christ, this Bush thug is really going to do this. Now, that's what's making its way around the Internet today, and I would tend to give that story a lot of credence, because if you stop and think about it, Gary, I realize career officers have a lot more to risk than an airman third. On the other hand, they have the contacts and they have the wherewithal, flag rank officers or at least close to that, you know, majors, colonels, whatever. They have the wherewithal to get the word out and cover their tracks.
But not only that, though, they also have a perspective that maybe, you know, we don't have, or somebody in the lower ranks, of just how strapped we are militarily.
Yes.
You know, they might be like, these sons of bitches think we're, you know, we're magic, that, you know, we're America and we can never break the military or break this economy or something.
Yeah.
But they're probably like, my God, you know, they're gonna drop these nukes, and then the next thing we're going to have to do is we're going to have to send ground troops in there. Because a lot of people don't understand, you know, we're $9 trillion in debt right now. That has nothing to do, they're not calculating, and I don't even believe that number, but they're not calculating having to retool the entire military. You're talking about helicopters that are thousands of hours over their useful life expectancy.
That's
that
right.
Get these waivers.
That's right.
And all these equipment being used in the sand. They, you know, when all this National Guard equipment, it's all going to be junked. It's probably not even worth ferrying it back to the States.
Isn't this all just mind blowing?
Yeah, but you talk to these SOB conservatives, and they'll piss and moan when somebody brings up protecting children with health care. You know, not on my dime, okay? But they'll turn around and they'll ignore $12 billion a month being spent on the military, and that's just what we're spending on a daily basis. Again, it doesn't have anything to do with the future medical care of the soldiers, the retooling of the military. I mean, they're talking about, you know, having, you know, they're running out of bullets and things like that. I mean, I can't imagine why anybody would want to be president. I really can't. You have to be a lunatic. I almost hope a Republican wins, especially a conservative like Fred Thompson, because then we'll be able to squarely place the blame for this fiasco on these SOBs. Because I'll tell you right now, what's going to happen is the Democrats going to win, and all these freaking stinking flying monkeys are going to, with their memory of a gnat, are going to blame it on the Democrats. Oh, if we had four more years of Bush-type leadership,
yeah,
we'd be in fairy tale land now.
Yeah, it's totally, completely in stuck in some orbit someplace a million miles from here, Gary, a billion miles from here. I agree with what you're saying about Republicans. You can't have a discussion with them. You can't point this stuff out. You can't say, look, don't you understand? This thing that Sidney Blumenthal has in Salon.com, holy jumping Jesus. I mean, all knew.
Yeah, but Mike, you know, you bring this up to a flying monkey, and they're not gonna refute the evidence. They're gonna go, whoa, that Salon.com is a liberal frickin' rag.
Yeah, and Blumenthal must be a Jew, right? You know.
Well, yeah, happy Rosh Hashanah to him.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Mike, I asked you a couple of months ago about, you know, how we're ever going to get back to the way that, this country used to be.
Yeah.
It seems like we're so much deeper. You know, I wonder if we're ever going to stop going in the wrong direction, you know, let alone ever start to attempt to even go back to the...
I know.
Well,
I hear what you're saying. Gary, I got to leave it there. Thanks.
Thanks
I appreciate
a lot,
appreciate yeah. you checking in, pal. Take it easy. Take it easy, all right?
The fact is there's these prisoners buried in the sand, mass murdered in containers. The fact is, in Afghanistan, more die than in New York, and most of them civilians. Hail Caesar! This is what you're fighting for. The king of Death Row, Texas, elected by his brother-in-law. Hail Caesar! This is what you're fighting for. Oil money, Enron, the American Empire!
We must not and will not allow the world's worst leaders to hold the United States and our friends and allies blackmail.
Jesus, God. You can take this with as many grains of salt as you want to, but it has crossed my desk. Greetings, America. To quote The Onion's Jim Anschauer, hola, amigos, what up? I know it's been a long time since I rapped at you. If you've read any mainstream media today, and fortunate for me, I know some Americans read nothing else, you may have heard that I'm going to be releasing a video next week on the anniversary of 9/11. First of all, let me say that I'm the first dead guy to ever release a new video. Pretty amazing stuff, eh? If you don't believe I'm dead, then you have to believe that the allegedly most powerful military force in the world has been unable to find me after 6 years. Yet they say I'm still living in a cave. For those of you who think I'm alive, you'll just have to wait for the video. But I will offer a few of my thoughts. First of all, let me say that I have discovered a weapon of mass deception. ABC News is reporting that my beard is now black, unlike in past videos and pictures where my beard was streaked with gray. The answer's simple. My stylist, who does a wonderful job of making sure I have perfectly white pajamas to wear, which is not easy when you're living in a cave, my stylist turned me on to Just for Men. That stuff really works. The chicks are willingly lifting their veils for me now, and I don't even have to dye for them to be with virgins. Enough about me. I want to know how you Americans are doing. From what I've been hearing, things don't sound so good since 9/11. With the record rate of home foreclosures and the subprime mortgage debacle, your economy looks to be headed downhill. The war in Iraq must be costing a pretty penny, too, with U.S. forces there at an all-time high. Too bad your government has to spend all your tax money on bullets instead of insuring your children's health and feeding your homeless. Sounds like the land of the free isn't so free anymore either. I hear my buddy Bush signed the Military Commissions Act of 2006 and thereby cast aside your Constitution and the principle of habeas corpus, which protects against unlawful and indefinite imprisonment. The Military Commissions Act also gives the president absolute power to designate enemy combatants and to set his own definitions of torture. Bush has perfected the example set by some Middle East countries. It doesn't matter anymore what the majority of Americans want. Bush and his elected representatives press on with their agenda. I may be flattering myself, but maybe he and his dad learned some things about governing people from me back when I used to get all that CIA money and support. I don't want to give the whole video away, but let me just say that in the last 6 years, your government has done more to oppress and restrict you American people than I ever could have dreamed. And those planes flying into the World Trade Center were nothing compared to what has happened to your country since, or what is yet to come. Be sure to see my video. I promised Bush I'll be extra, extra scary. He needs all the help he can get. That can't be authentic. Can't be. Ron in Briarwood, New York, sent this in. He said the subject line is Thompson rewrites history on Leno. Ron writes, in his first appearance as a declared candidate, in his first words as a possible nominee, Fred Thompson showed his utter stupidity and lack of knowledge. Leno asked him why we are so hated all over the world. Thompson didn't answer the question, but he did say, quote, I will say this to those people, that we Americans have shed more blood in defense of freedom than all the other countries combined. End quote. The audience cheered, and Leno remained silent, and history was rewritten. Just look at the number of Russians killed in World War II fighting Hitler and the Nazis. Millions. Just look at the number of Chinese killed fighting Japan. Millions. And yet this stupid man can say stupid things like this to a stupid audience and be cheered? Yeah. And by the way, since, you know, I am known for my ad hominem attacks, I have to say that Fred Thompson looks, he looks like somebody who has a very, very, very intense, out of control, and bad crack habit. He really does. I can't believe this guy. I just can't believe this is going to be one of the most short-lived presidential campaigns in history, where candidates' campaigns in history, where it concerns Thompson. You know it, and I know it. This guy is, you know, going to leap out of the starting gate and fall flat on his ass. Just boom. And you know why? Because other than a few wild-eyed, radical, freaked-out right-wingers, nobody cares about Fred Thompson except this drooling, slavering media, television medium that we have in this country that just, they've got, it's just like a huge maw of just a carnivorous, chomping, chewing mouth 10 miles wide that has to be constantly filled with disappeared co-eds and killers and shooters and Charlie Manson and 10-year-old tapes and oh God, somebody gets busted in a toilet. Ooh, let's focus on that for a week or two. And now this, Fred Thompson. I'll tell you when Fred Thompson will be president of the United States. He'll be president immediately following my second term as president. What a jackass. Where do these people come from? I'm Mr. Crackhead. I was a prosecutor on television. I know what I'm about. I was a senator, too. Did you know I was a senator from Tennessee? You didn't know that? And then here it is. The other thing that happened today, and we're going to come to your phone calls right after this. We have two open lines, 800-989-1480. This was today too. I think, or was this yesterday? Let me look at the date line here. Time just rips by when you're having fun. No, this was today. After I found out about Pavarotti's death and read the email from AJ, the Music Factory. You know, I'm kind of flipping through the various websites trying to get some news. And I go to the BBC every day, BBC website. That's always a scream. And I see this one, Syria, quote, fires on Israel warplanes, end quote. Now, why they put that in quotes, I don't know. But the BBC says, Syrian officials said the defenses forced the jets to drop ammunition over deserted areas and turn back. According to the official news agency Sana, Israel's military said it would not comment on the reports. Israel and Syria remain technically at war, yada, yada, yada. The Syrian military spokesman said the Israeli warplanes had flown into Syrian airspace at around 0100 local time on Thursday morning. Military spokesman said, quote, the Israeli enemy aircraft infiltrated into the Arab-Syrian territory through the northern border, coming from the Mediterranean, heading toward the eastern region, breaking the sound barrier. They were then engaged by Syrian air defense forces in the Tal al-Abiad, an area 160 kilometers north of Raqqa near the border with Turkey. The statement goes on, air defense units confronted them and forced them to leave after they dropped some ammunition into deserted areas without causing any human or material damage. Syria's information minister told Al Jazeera television that his government, quote, was seriously studying the nature of the response, end quote. So I saw this. Syria fires on Israel warplanes. I thought, okay, here we go. Rock and roll. A false flag operation. That was my first thought. Syrian airplanes or Syrian defenses firing on Israeli airplanes is insane. First of all, it's insane. Given the type of response that the Israeli Defense Forces usually unleash when something like that happens in the real world, I don't think the Syrian Defense Forces would say, "Oh, look up in the sky. It's a couple of Israeli aircraft. Oh, let's go shoot them. Okay? Okay. Let's go now. Good. Fire! Boom." No, I don't think that would happen. That's A. B, then I start to wonder, who's making this stuff up? Where did the planes come from? Is this a George W. Bush neocon false flag operation? Is it a psyops operation put together by, some deep, dark, secret cancer inside the U.S. intelligence/military establishment? What is this? What is this? And the Israelis, of course, they don't say anything. Like, what? Our planes were forced to dump weapons and flee? Are you completely meshuggah? What are you talking about?
Flying high, tell me what you're saying. If you could talk to me, what news would you bring? Our voices in the sky.
Your host for a Pian's Friends Future, it's Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. We're going to close this hour out, too, in a few minutes, once again, with Pavarotti's rendition of one of his renditions of Nessun Dorma. So, the whole 3 minute and 1 second of it. And of course, we're doing this because of the contribution he made to joy. Even though somebody wrote me tonight about Chuck Mangione does more for me where it concerns Italian music, makes me want to get up and dance. And I wrote back and said, Italian music is not supposed to make you get up and want to dance. It's supposed to make you want to cry or weep. That's what it's all about. The Italians. Are you kidding me? Dare I use the word we? We suffer. I can remember as a kid growing up with my Italian immigrant grandparents. Oh, my God. Everything was just, it was all peaks, no valleys. My grandparents had five children. My mother was the oldest, and I came along. Their youngest was only 7 years older than me. He was a surprise baby. My uncle Vic, Victorio, and they were crazy. They were all crazy. I mean, good crazy, not vicious, murderous crazy. Nobody hit anybody. Although my grandmother would make all of us. We were 13 cousins, and when we came to visit, if we disobeyed, she'd make us go, she'd hand us a paring knife. And the first time it ever happened, I thought, what, I'm supposed to kill myself now? But you were supposed to take the paring knife and go out to the lilac bush and cut off a switch. And if you brought, so she could switch you. And if you brought one in that was real thin, then she'd go cut one. And it would be as thick as your wrist. So, you know, you had to find a happy medium there and cut a switch that was going to, you know, just hurt like hell. But not as bad as if grandma went out and cut one off and came in with a club. Other than that, there was no, there was, you know, the screaming was, it was all emotion driven. It was just Italian craziness. Except for the switch. Well, that was old country though, see. And usually the only reason my grandmother did that to any of us was, two things. If she was watching you and you left the property, they had about 4 or 5 acres right on the edge of Findlay, Ohio, where all those floods were a couple of weeks ago. And if you left the property when she was watching, like followed the creek that went through their orchard, and if you followed that creek and went off the property, God help you. Give your ass to Jesus, or give your soul to Jesus, because your ass belonged to grandma. There was just no way out of that. And the other one, the other thing that warranted a switching was if you, her words, acted up in church. Woo, baby. But I digress. So Italian music is not, you know, to me, I don't know. It's the only thing that would calm the hysteria that is as much a part of the Italian genetic structure as I don't know. Pick any ethnic or national or racial group. You know, every group has their defining characteristics. And when you lean on them too hard, people go, oh, you're stereotyping. Well, no kidding. Of course. Where do you think stereotypes come from? Yeah. God.
Oh, you're stereotyping.
Yeah. You're right. So we're going to play it again here. And you're not supposed to get up and dance to this. You're supposed to sit there and just sob. You're supposed to sit there and listen to Pavarotti doing Nessun Dorma. And you're supposed to sit there and go, that's Jewish. Oh, God. Oh, the suffering. You don't know what I've seen. Oh, my heart. I can't stand this. I swear to God.
Tua fredda stanza, guardi le stelle che tremano d'amore e di speranza. Ma il mio mistero è chiuso in me, il nome mio nessun saprà.
That just reaches inside your rib cage, doesn't it? It just goes right up behind your sternum and just squeezes. We'll be back after the applause. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio Network.
In the midnight choir, I have tried in my way to be free. Like a fish on a horn, like a knife from an old-fashioned bow.
Welcome back, about 7 past the hour. Oh, this is funny. A.E. writes in, Mike, after all you've been saying tonight, I've been expecting you to say you're going to support the potential first American president of Italian ancestry, Rudy Giuliani. You know when I'll do that, A.E.? On the same day they're serving gelatos in hell. That's when I'll do that. All right, let's go to your phone calls. This is the Nova M Radio Network. My name is Mike Malloy. We are in our third hour tonight, starting with Alan here, listening on WINZ in Miami. Hey, Alan.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. How about you?
Well, under the circumstances, I suppose you could say it's passable. Now I have to remember what I was calling about. Oh, first of all, first things first, to let you know of an event going on in Miami, Florida.
Okay.
It's going to be the kickoff meeting and rally of the South Florida Impeachment Coalition on the 15th of September.
No, that's coming up pretty soon. Where's it
going to
be?
Is there
a website?
Yes, there is. It's called FloridaImpeach.org.
FloridaImpeach.org. People can get all the information there, right?
That's right.
Okay, FloridaImpeach.org. Check it out, Floridians.
Yeah, it says it's time for the I word to come out of the closet and on to the table.
I can go along with that.
Anyway, it says just a little bit. It says impeachment has to happen for at least two reasons. First, it's the appropriate constitutional remedy for high crimes by officials. And secondly, it may be the last defense for our nation to avoid further diplomatic or military catastrophes by this out-of-touch administration. Anyway, you know
yeah,
that.
Sure.
I just wanted to comment also on that Kansas City thing. Watch for more and more signs of this authoritarian government to...
Okay, just so for the people who maybe weren't listening the mm-hmm. first hour about CBS the morning show going to a park in Kansas City, and the people there who were invited, every public was invited, they wanted to unfurl, the American Friends Service Committee wanted to unfurl some banners that were opposed to the war. They didn't say, you know, Bush is a murdering son of a bitch. They were just opposed to the war, and CBS used their security and the local police to tell the people, no, you're not going to do it on our program. You know, forgetting, Alan, right, that there was a time, I remember, it's very quaint, it's a faint memory, I seem to remember this, when the airwaves belonged to the public and were licensed to responsible news organizations or responsible broadcasters who would then, in turn, devote a certain amount of their broadcast day, whether it's radio or television, to what were quaintly referred to as public affairs. You remember that? No, you're not that old. You don't
actually, I'm older than you think. But anyway, the I look around and think about that. Imagine, you know, even if they were all loonies, it's news. They were there doing something for some reason that motivated them. I mean, they certainly cover protests in other parts of the world, especially if they get violent. And that's what they really want. They want protests to get violent, and only then will they cover it. Because really, what they're doing, they're doing national and foreign policy instead of news.
Yeah, that's another one of my targets when the lights go out. I don't know how you strike back at an empire like this one, the American broadcast media empire, to which I make my little smarmy contribution every day. But I swear to God, there are so many forces of evil standing astride this country right now that, you know, most of us feel like were you know, some kid out in the field trying to shoot crows with a pop gun or something. And here these behemoths, these monsters, whether it's the Bush crime family or media or corporations or certain elements of the military, they just walk over us. They just say, get out of my way, you dog turd. Step out of the way or I will smash you.
Well, we are. That's what we are. We are. They don't like people resisting, and we're in the way. I did neglect to mention, by the way, that a featured guest speaker at our event is going to be David Swanson from AfterDowningStreet.org.
Yeah, that's
coming down here.
Yeah, he's one of the few good guys remaining. All right.
So come on down.
Florida, and what is it now?
FloridaImpeach.org.
All right, Alan. Thanks for checking in. I appreciate
you.
Your call.
Bye.
All right, take care. Take care. I think that's, you know, that's part of my beef anyway with quote the way things are end quote. Just feeling so insignificant, like, you know, I know what side of the fence I'm on. I'm on the same side of the fence you're on. I'm on the side of truth, justice, decency, honor. That's where I am. That's the side of the fence I'm on. And so are you. And I think about the people who are not on this side of the fence and what they control. And I think to myself, you know, why am I being smashed? Why am I stepped on? Why am I not allowed to unfurl my banner on CBS's morning show? You know, why do these pieces of human waste like Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh and Neil Bortz and the rest of these filth mongers, why do they show up on literally hundreds of stations? Because they're more talented? Ah, for Christ's sake, no. What? I just get tired of it, don't you? I know you do. Of course you do. Of the assumption being made that my feelings about what has happened here are irrelevant, immaterial, non-essential to the survival. You know, who am I? I'm nobody. You know, and the behemoths will just, they'll walk on me, they'll smash my house, they'll smash my job, which I've had happen before, they'll try to smash my children. And what am I supposed to do? If I advocate really fighting back in a manner that defends the liberty of this country, I can be accused of advocating sedition or armed revolution. What the hell am I supposed? What are you supposed to do? When I say I'm referring to you, everybody on this side of the fence. What the hell are we supposed to do? Peacefully protest. And now, of course, the way the laws are not being enforced yet, but they're there on presidential directives and orders and acts of Congress. Any time they want, they can swoop down, for example, on the people in the park in Kansas City who had their banners out. And they can take these people away permanently. And seize their property and their assets and put them in a prison where they cannot have legal representation. Do you understand? That's now possible. And so that can happen to me, and it can happen to you. Because you send an email here, or you listen to this program. Son of a bitch, how did this happen? Why is it that the people on this side of the fence are considered unpatriotic or working against the troops or whatever the hell it is when we point out that there are murderous Nazi thugs who have taken over this country? And we're the ones that are supposed to sit down and shut up? We're the ones that are supposed to hide our banners? We're the ones that are supposed to read crap like, well, if you're trying to infiltrate a right-wing organization's rally, have a cloth banner and fold it up and put it inside your shirt, you know, and sneak in. Sneak in my ass! You know how I want to go into one of those places? Here's how I want to go in. I want to have two hand grenades, one in each hand with the pins pulled. That's right. And I'll hold down the caps. I won't do that. Okay. Now, come and handcuff me, you psycho son of a bitch. Come on. Handcuff me now. That's how weird I've gotten. Do you understand that? I am tired of being walked on.
And aiming straight at the youth, and all they talk of terrorism's nothing but a spoof. Hip to your games, hip to the science of war. Propaganda make me fight, but what am I fighting for? My way of life means some rights, give or take less and more. See through the eyes of the poor, plus I'm black to the core. Ignorance is on tour, looking stadiums and more. The days of Hitler paint a picture, patriotic rigor. You raise a flag on a land, snatch on board Eagle's score, and send a symbol on your currency to finance your war. I'm saying no, not in my name, not in my life, not for my hands, that ain't my fight, not in my name. You wage a war against terrorists and violence, and try to wave your guns to fear a sword. In the silence, no, not in my name, not in my life, not by my hands, that ain't my fight.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
Anyone past the hour. Hey, I didn't even know this. Somebody just sent me from the Washington Post, the Reverend D. James Kennedy, prominent television evangelist. He's the guy with Coral Ridge Ministers. Bit the big one yesterday. I'll be damned. Died September 5th at his home in Lauderdale. He had a complication of heart attack, suffered in December. So once again, the gates of the Christian hell open wide to accept another soul. Oh, Malloy, you're so bad. You're so bad. And this is from Dawn in Long Beach, Washington, who writes, this is regarding the discussion last night about the Mexican truckers, or the night before. She writes, "Hi, Mike. My dad is a truck driver. He's 64. Last week he was in Nogales in 125-degree heat waiting for his trailer. It had been taken across the border into Mexico, and he had to wait for it to come back. He's just about as PO'd about this Mexican trucker thing as I've ever heard him about anything. What happens to him if his company decides that the run he's doing, he has a route from Albuquerque to Phoenix up to Salt Lake sometimes, what happens if the company decides the run he's doing can be done cheaper by a Mexican? Anyway, slightly off topic, but still kind of relevant, have you ever seen Last Exit to Brooklyn? It's about union workers in Brooklyn in the 50s, one of the best, if darkest, movies I've ever seen. And seems to fit right into this discussion. Maybe you'll mention it to your vast and erudite audience." Oh, yeah, Last Exit to Brooklyn and the book is excellent film. Excellent film. It was, I saw it as a teenager, several years after it came out. But what was surprising to me as an adult was that it was made and released in the period of time that it was. In the 50s, because it was released right during the Red Scare, the McCarthy era, and Harry Bridges, who was the head of the Longshoremen's Union on the West Coast, was absolutely considered to be a total, complete red, complete communist, whose real goal, according to Gene McCarthy and the House Un-American Activities Committee, whose real goal was to turn our ports over to the commies. I mean, really sick garbage like that. And I was surprised, again, as an adult, looking back 25 years, that such a movie was released at a time in this country when the booger man was not Osama bin Laden, but it was Joe Stalin or Brezhnev. Stalin died in 53, so I guess it was Bulganin and Khrushchev who took over. Bulganin, remember him? And then... they referred to him in the New York Times as K&B. And then Bulganin. Am I remembering that right, or is this just an acid flashback where I think I'm remembering something, and actually what I'm remembering is a comic strip I read in 1978? You know, I never have any idea when I get these moments. I don't know if it's real or not real, and frankly, it really doesn't matter. But I think it was Bulganin, and Khrushchev, and then Bulganin met with an unfortunate accident or something, and Khrushchev rode the white pony all by himself for a long, long, long time. So, yeah, I remember the movie Last Exit to Brooklyn. But I digress. Back to your phone calls. Eric is calling from Tacoma, Washington, listening on the Internet. Hey, Eric.
Hi. Hey, Mike. I called regarding a comment you made yesterday about Hillary already being the Democratic nominee.
Say that again. I'm sorry.
I'm calling regarding a comment you made last night about Hillary already being the Democratic nominee.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt.
Well, if everyone just gives up and says that she's going to be the nominee, then she will, but I don't think the primaries are over for at least another 4 months or so. And if people actually get out there and organize, someone other than Hillary could be the nominee, someone like either John Edwards or Dennis Kucinich.
Well, sure, but absolutely not. We don't live in a country anymore. I hate to be the bearer of bad tidings, Eric, but we don't live in a country anymore, at least not now. We can get back to this, but we're not there now, where a candidate that is backed by corporate America to the extent that Hillary Clinton is going to be defeated because guys like you and me go out and try to organize for Dennis Kucinich. Again, I hate to issue you a blistering fact here, political fact, but we don't live in that kind of America anymore. We're not there. We used to be there, and hopefully, Eric, we'll get back. But we're not there through this election cycle. I'm telling you now that Hillary Clinton is going to be the Democratic nominee for president, period. There's no way around it. I hate that. I'd love to see it be Kucinich or Wesley Clark or a number of people. But so what? You know, that's something I want? Ooh, that matters a lot. You understand what I'm saying, Eric?
Yeah, and I'm just saying that if we work hard enough,
okay, all right. Now, I'm not arguing with that, Eric. Seriously, if you want to fight the good fight, I respect you for that. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Rebuild America. Keep all the lies. We've got to rebuild America. That dream we are building for the time. Now, don't sit at home saying, what could I do? Remember that unity starts with you.
Hold on. Hold on.
Hold on. Is democracy dead? Only time's gonna tell. Get your feet in the street and start raising some hell.
La donna è mobile, qual fiume al vento, muta d'accento e di pensiero, sempre una rapide, leggiadro viso, in pianto e riso.
Got the flying monkey right, blues? Here's the cure, Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. You know, I think I have. Okay, thank you. I made another mistake. Last Exit to Brooklyn was not written in the 50s. It was written in 1964. I missed it by 5 years. It was set in Brooklyn in the 50s. Thanks very much for the correction. Jesus, sometimes, somebody emailed me in tonight earlier and said,
it's not Nessun Dorma, it's Nessun Dorma. And I'm thinking to myself, what? So I listened back at the tape, and apparently at one point early in the program this evening, it sounded like I said Dormo. And I just wonder, there are a couple of folks that I have assigned the task of, when I make incorrect historical references, please let me know, because, you know, I don't want to sound like a jackass. But slightly off literary references? Oh, come on. Don't you people have anything better to do than to send me an email telling me that Last Exit to Brooklyn really wasn't written in the 50s? Excuse me. Jesus God. I have, you know, our senior correspondent, Chris in Minnesota, and our good friend Reg over at TVNewsLies.org, and I think there's one other person. You know, I have made formal requests to these people. Yeah, for God's sake, keep me in the middle of the road when I say things that are, you know, incorrect. But if you mishear my pronunciation of Nessun Dorma, and you jump on that right away, I mean, that's just so pissy. You know what I'm saying? Just so pissy. Huh?
How about the vast minority of people who have emailed in tonight and said, "Ew, I don't like opera music."
Yeah,
sounds like our toddler.
I know. Well, you know, George Lincoln, or was it Abraham Washington, who said, "You can fool all the people on Tuesday, but you can't fool some of the people ever," or something like that. back to the phone calls. Michael is calling from Miami, listening on WINZ. Hey, Michael. You met who at a hot dog stand?
Yeah, yes.
You met
a little vignette, if you'd like to hear it.
I'd love to hear it. Let's hear it.
Oh, it was in the wintertime, and I was walking up Fifth Avenue in Manhattan, and I see in the distance something bouncing down the sidewalk,
right,
foot to foot to foot. And I got closer. I saw the cars were honking their horns and yelling out, and he was waving to people. It was Luciano Pavarotti.
Yeah?
And I talked to him a little bit, and he didn't have an entourage. He didn't have a bodyguard, no car, just he alone. So I hugged him. It was like hugging the side of a building. And he had a little beret-type hat on and a ski jacket that was open and a big scarf around him.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were talking a while, and he asked, he said, "Come on, I'll buy you a Frankfurter." And I said to him, "Oh, Luciano, capisco che no è una cosa grande per te, ma è onore di me di comprare una Frankfurter."
Sure you
know,
did.
"It's not important for you, but it's an honor for me to buy you a Frankfurter." By the way, you know how to say Frankfurter in Italian?
No.
Frankfurter. I don't know either. So I was arguing with him. He wouldn't let me. And I said, "Come on." And finally, he allowed me to. And the guy is just, I've never met anyone so famous who was so humble.
Yeah.
He was as sweet as a little puppy dog. And I also saw him sing in person three times. At Lincoln Center in Miami, Manhattan, and twice, if you believe it or not, at Brooklyn College, where it wasn't an opera, he would just sing arias, and magnificent. And, you know, there's so many people dying lately, and I don't like to hear about anyone, illness or death. I don't wish anything bad on anyone. But Luciano Pavarotti's death struck me particularly badly.
Yeah,
and he was just a wonderful person. He spread the word about opera to the common people or people in certain areas of the world who were not particularly fond of or knowledgeable of opera. And with his limited English, he had a great ability to communicate.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He's a wonderful guy.
Well,
can I get a bit more serious now?
No, that's a great story, Michael.
Yeah, I treasure that, and every chance I get, I tell it to somebody.
Well, I appreciate it. This is a good day to tell it too.
Uh huh. Could I get serious?
Yeah, go ahead.
It's extremely important, Michael. If ever in the world of high politics in America, there was a time that begged for impeachment, this is it. If not now, never.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't only be good for us as Americans, but the world does not look kindly to America today.
That's right.
If we did this, the world would say, look at that. The Americans, as disgusting as they are, running rampant all over the world, sticking their noses in everyone's business, had an illness, and they cured it themselves. We would have a great deal of respect around the world if we were to do that, mm-hmm. to say nothing of what it would mean to us in America.
That's very true. This is a lousy comparison, but I remember back in the late 80s when Gorbachev came up with the ideas of glasnost, openness, and perestroika, which was restructuring the Soviet system. Of course, the American money grubbers rushed in and screwed it all up for him and created this class of oligarchs. But then the second thing, after he talked about that for a while, Gorbachev, and then refused to send the troops into where was it, Hungary, and then the demolition of the Berlin Wall. And I remember thinking to myself back then, you know, I never had the kind of gut revulsion for Gorbachev that I had for some of his predecessors and what I have for Putin right now. But I still remember thinking about Gorbachev, you know, this guy has really, to me, just committed several acts of redemption where it concerns his being the head of the Communist Party in Russia and also the Prime Minister, whatever the hell he was, President. You're absolutely right. If we would step up and do what our Constitution requires us to do, not what Nancy Pelosi wants or doesn't want to do, but what the Constitution requires. I think you're right. I think the rest of the world would say, you know, they came out of their fog. Look at this.
Yeah.
The Americans came out of their fog.
Uh-huh.
Maybe there's some hope.
Uh-huh. Could you imagine these two serving out their terms, and as ex-presidents do, building a library filled with revisionism and lies?
It's all going to be lies. Anything in a Bush library is going to
future
be lies.
Future generations will come and say, oh, what a wonderful president this guy was.
Yeah.
So it's impeachment must be done. And if it isn't, I lose a lot of respect for my own country. And it's hard enough for me to love it as I did before when I served in the military. It's just another day. Is another day of lies and cheating and stealing at the highest levels of government.
I hear you. Listen, Michael, I gotta leave it there. But before we go, you know, I very seldom get to hear spoken Italian anymore since my childhood with my grandparents. Because you know, I live in Atlanta, and nobody speaks Italian here. So before we go here, would you just do a couple of more sentences in Italian? Anything you want to say? Don't translate. Just do it Italian. Go ahead.
Okay. Io sento il radio di signor Malloy tutta notte. È piacere a me perché le cose che dice Malloy sono le cose che io sento.
Thank you, Michael.
And one thing, Mike.
Yes.
You can get the best teachers to teach you a language. Go to the best schools. Get the videotapes and all of that. You will never learn a language unless you practice it.
That's very true. Oops, sorry there, Michael. Didn't mean to crush your ears. Thanks, Michael. Thanks for checking in. Thanks for the Pavarotti story. That's great. I love it. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
American League, the evident. Well, this is evident, yeah. In the American way, you must give and I shall take. I will tell you what is moral and what's just. Because I want, because I will, because I can.
Sotto un manto di stelle, Roma bella m'appare. Solitario il mio cuore, disilluso d'amore, vuol nell'ombra cantare. Una muta fontana e un balcone lassù. O chitarra romana, accompagnami tu.
10 before the hour, thanks to the opera buffs who put the program together tonight. Ian Huff, who engineered in Phoenix at KPHX and answered your calls. Billy Foster, our chat room moderator, whose nickname is Vinny. And Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent. Of course, our executive producer, Catherine Bay. Thanks to everybody. Kathy in Green Bay writes something very, very interesting here. If we were to impeach, and in the email, not only would the world appreciate Americans, but our American form of government, and wouldn't that be a good way to spread democracy? Regarding what our last caller said, yeah, when you stop and think about it. People around the rest of the world have never seen an impeachment and removal from office of a criminal leader in this country. Not that we've had more than a couple. Nixon cut and run before he could feel the weight of justice. Reagan was totally senile by the time they were thinking about holding him to the bar of justice. The attack on Clinton was nothing more than right-wingers who just insisted that if they couldn't see Bill Clinton's penis, they were going to run him out of office. But the point that Kathy's making here, I think, in so much of the world, about the only way you can change governments is through a military overthrow by either us or the military within the country that is overthrown. For the most part, it's usually us that decides to overthrow and execute anyone like Salvador Allende or Diem whoever. Or we snatch them and give them a show trial like Noriega and throw them in jail. So for people in various countries around the world who may have regimes in place that are suppressive, oppressive, dictatorial, which is just about every country in the Middle East, with the exception of Israel, all the Arab-speaking countries, and if they were to see that there is a way to remove a criminal from office that doesn't require sending jets into the capital or troops into the mountains, if they could see that, then the people who possibly are wanting liberty and or freedom some of these godforsaken countries that are dominated by these religious freaks or these sociopathic fascists would come to the conclusion that maybe democracy is not this monster that George Bush unleashed on Iraq. Maybe democracy is something that really does make sense. Because if you can remove a leader who is obviously a sociopath, obviously a mass killer, and obviously a criminal. That's George Bush. If you can remove him without a revolution in the among the military forces in your country, oh my God, you mean that's possible? Good point, Kathy. All right, we're going to, what time do we have to be out? We have to be out in about 30 seconds, don't we? All right. Well, listen, we're going to bail now because I'm going to play this one more time. Nessun Dorma, in honor of Luciano Pavarotti.
So thanks for participating tonight, however you did that. I do appreciate it. We'll see you tomorrow night, okay? I'm going to go watch that Paul Potts YouTube video and cry again. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Arrivederci, Luciano.
Grazie. Grazie.